So let me start an introduction for Becky Jennison. Becky has a master's degree and is a licensed clinical professional counselor. She's been working with families and individuals for 26 years. She started her helping career as a nurse, and while finishing her bachelor's and master's degrees, she held positions in the areas of mental health and parenting education. In 1999, while running a partial hospitalization program that treated individuals with severe anxiety and depression, she noticed a high correlation of physical illness in the patient population. So she began reaching out to other medical areas, encouraging them to consider using her program, which focused on cognitive behavioral therapy and relaxation. This is how she was introduced to Dr. Stephen Jennison of Prairie Heart Institute at St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Illinois. And she became part of that multidisciplinary team specializing in congestive heart failure. So Becky began using HeartMath in her private practice and in the cardiology clinic in 2004. Since 2007, she's been a co-coordinator and primary clinician in a research study with 150 patients using the HeartMath techniques and the technologies there at Prairie Heart Institute. Today, Becky's going to talk about her experiences using the M-Wave products with patients at the Prairie Heart Institute and some of the results they're seeing. Thanks for joining us today, Becky.
All right. Hi, everybody. That introduction took up the first 15 minutes I was going to talk about. But that was great. It was very succinct, and I think kind of gives you an idea of how my interest with spine did have that background and the medical field. And also, again, started seeing the correlation between individuals that were having severe anxiety and depression and those access pre-diagnoses, which are the medical illnesses. And in summer 2004, I always felt we were using Herbert Benson's relaxation response in a multidisciplinary clinic of heart failure patients. And I guess I'll back up and tell you, Prairie Cardiovascular Consultants is a group of cardiologists in Springfield, Illinois, and there's 40 to 50 cardiologists, and not only do they have a large practice in Springfield, Illinois, but they branch out to many, many, many satellite locations up as far as Pontiac, Illinois, which is south of Chicago, down to the southernmost tip of Illinois. So it has the potential to reach a great amount of patients. My husband, Dr. Stephen Jennison, happened to be trained in England and South Africa, and it was very much surprised when he moved here and saw the power that physicians are given and was used to practicing in more of a multidisciplinary fashion. So he had St. John's Hospital, which is affiliated with Prairie Heart, and the marriage of Prairie Heart and St. John's becomes Prairie Heart Institute, who I work with and who I'm actually employed by. But he started talking to them about wanting to have that multidisciplinary experience. So he's managed for the past 10, 12 years to be able to have one day a week where he has a multidisciplinary congestive heart failure clinic. And there are other patients that we see those days besides heart failure patients. They try to get the heart failure people there because it's so important for them to have some holistic teaching about diet and exercise and all sorts of areas that they need to be looking at in their lives. And so we have myself as a counselor, and we have a dietitian and a pharmacist and an exercise physiologist there and the nurses who do a lot of teaching as well. And so it ends up being a lengthy stay for the patient. So during a period of time, I was actually just volunteering because it was difficult for him to find a counselor that had the background to be able to look at all of these areas and not just the psych background. At that point, I was using more the Herbert Benson relaxation response, teaching diaphragmatic breathing, and that was very positive. I mean, people would get nice results, but as I found in the partial hospitalization program that I ran, we had difficulty with people complying with that longer term. They would do great in the setting of a partial program or in the clinic in the moment, but then having them report back, frequently there wasn't follow-up at home. So I began branching out, looking at other options, and that is when I found HeartMath, when their study with congestive heart failure patients popped up. And happened to be at a conference with a psychologist, Sam Sears, in Boston, and he works, I think, in Gainesville, Florida, one of the Florida universities, but also does work with people post-defibrillator who can actually have kind of a post-traumatic stress response. And we were at a meal, and I said, you know, I hate to interrupt you, but have you ever heard of this freeze framer thing? And he said, as a matter of fact, I have. I just bought it. It's up in my room. And I said, well, what do you think? I was thinking about getting this and starting to use it in the clinic. And his assessment from his brief experience with using it for himself to evaluate it was like, yes, go for it. So I had a private practice at the time, so I started using it simultaneously in my private practice while I was using it in the congestive heart failure clinic as well. Let me just say briefly, because I'm not here to talk about my private practice, but I do have to say, in my private practice, I had excellent results with patients, and to the point of people that had severe anxiety disorders who would say, please don't refer me to go for medication evaluation. I want to try to do everything I possibly can on my own. And if they learned the technique, I would teach them using the, at that time it was the freeze framer modality on the computer. I got in waves as soon as they came out for the people that had already practiced and learned on freeze frame. We would times would sit in the museum wave during the entire session. And the people that would practice had excellent results, and I had many patients that did not have to go on medication were able to keep their anxiety under control. In the congestive heart failure setting, we're seeing similar results. We were seeing that people would come back, report after a month. We'd have them come up, and they'd be following up in a month or so, possibly, for their patients. And the nurses are really the ones that started noticing the great contrast. I think our first patient that really convinced them was a man who had, by looks of him, he was not very old, looked great, looked like he would be very healthy, but his heart is just in very, very, very poor condition, to the point that Dr. Jennison would comment that this is a man that was just waiting, kind of like a time bomb ticking. And because of that, and I don't know how much of that information he had, but he was very anxious about any physical sensation he had. Therefore, he was calling the nurses 5, 6, 7, 8 times a week. And immediately after learning quick coherence and practicing, I would have the patients practice twice a day, 10-minute sessions, quick coherence. They immediately noticed within the first week or two his calls had gone down almost to nil. So that got the nurses on board, and other cases like that, where what I found in a medical community is you have to have your doctor champion, number one. And many times the way to get your doctor champion is to get the nurses on board, because if it's something that in the long run is going to make everybody's practice feel more efficient and more effective, you're more likely to have them support your attempts and your practice. Fortunately, having Dr. Jensen, who I has a little bit more interest now since we are married. We've gotten married down the line. We've been married for a few years now, and this is an area he's very, very interested in, but he would be the first to tell you how important that Dr. Champion is. So we decided, after doing this for a few years and seeing the results, or what we perceived to be results with patients that, and talking with HeartMath and looking at some of the other research, that we'd like to look at doing some research ourselves. For instance, the congestive heart failure study and some other similar studies, the argument that typical medicine could give is, well, that's all well and good, but we don't have time. And if you all have gone through your one-on-one training, as we have, and gone through your workbooks, it would be difficult to find a physician practice to embrace that as part of a routine. So we put our heads together thinking, what do we feel like could possibly be enough to study that, if there are positive results, could easily be replicated in any physician practice? And that's what we tried to come up with our study. And I say that because one thing that we really, really firmly believe in is how this is affecting the physiology and the autonomic balance. And it's interesting because this has all been a blessing for us and for physician understanding and connecting dots in a way that I think physicians that we talk to and we work with, and we have residents that come through, and I actually just presented this to our new medical director of the hospital recently, who had been an internal medicine doctor, and I went through exactly what I do with patients with him, which I'll explain a little bit later. He was like, this all makes perfect sense. And basically what I do is pull up the slide of the autonomic nervous system with the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system on each side and talk about how we believe now from what we're seeing that what we call a person's internal idol, which is that balance of being sympathetically driven or parasympathetically driven or balanced, seems to be largely genetically predisposed. And is this, in fact, part of what we're hearing when they're talking about infant temperament? As many of you, if you've been in the medical field or been in that area at all, know there's an early childhood that's huge, the active temperament and the docile child. And is there a correlation here? And what ends up happening as you start having these discussions with patients is the people that are sympathetically driven and therefore are having anxiety symptoms are finally able to understand those anxiety symptoms in a way that is not stigma producing. They're able to acknowledge that, yes, I'm sort of hiding it because they feel like, oh, I'm being labeled a worrywart. Or once they start seeing how that sympathetic drive affects that part of their physiology and can in turn affect anxiety symptoms, they become much more interested in not only talking about what's going on with them, but understanding and actually seeing how these traits may have run in their family. So one diagram I have, which I did show Carol when we were there, that I used is talking about the internal idols. And I pull up slides, and it's got a little curvy line of a low idol and a curvy line of a medium idol and a curvy idol of a high idol. And, of course, the high is in the highest in the page, medium's in the middle. And up at the top, there's a bar, and it's called stress symptom threshold. And there is a list of different symptoms that can be pushed by the sympathetic drive. And, of course, I have blood pressure up there and arrhythmias, but I also have worry and insomnia and panic symptoms and a few other things up there. And help them see that if their idol, if their sympathetic drive, if their internal idol is high, it does not take a lot of change in their life. And stress equals change. So, again, the stress word can be another stigma word. Oh, I'm not stressed. Everything's great in my life. Well, a bad night's sleep is stress to your system. Toothache is stress to your system. Good news, job promotion is stress to your system. So, again, educating. Stress doesn't have to be a bad thing. And that is how I, in a nutshell, try to introduce what we're doing. Now, for the study purposes, HeartMath, they have the little booklet called The Inside Story, Understanding the Power of Feelings, the Heart-Brain Connection. We agreed that if we were not going to do extensive teaching as we do when we're being trained and we're coaching others, the one-to-one coaching, that would be a book that would be good for them to have for just overall understanding. And then they are more than welcome to educate themselves more as well. So that is how we've been introducing it in the clinic setting and the study. However, I will go on now to speak to you about specifically what our study involves. And what our study involves is we're looking at a six-month study of 150 patients, 100 in the active treatment group and 50 patients in a control group. And thus far, I've had around 50 patients in the treatment group, and about close to 70 patients total. So we're not quite halfway there. I am the only clinician, so we just have to go at the pace that we can go. Haven't really had a problem recruiting. I went down to cardiac rehab one day, spent 2 hours, and came out with 12 interested patients. So I did find that was going to be my treasure trove as far as referrals. And since I will be starting work next month as a counselor in our cardiac rehab program, I'm assuming that I can really pull from that pool of people, and I'm hoping to put a push on this and speed up our study a little bit more. The criteria for being in the study is just to have been seen at a Prairie Cardiology Clinic, so to be seen at one of our cardiologist clinics, and to be between the ages of 18 and 86 and not pregnant. Now, we have had several people by word of mouth become very interested in this, and typically how we get around this, because our protocol writing was a very extensive procedure. It took 6 months, and to finally get a protocol fit for our IRB, we are in a cardiology medical setting, and we are the first study that they've ever had that hasn't involved medication or devices or stents and that type of thing. So it was a very laborious, as heart math people that helped me will remember, because it was just so, the liability issues, et cetera. Although, as we felt, this is so benign and can do no harm, but I really was regretting that I wasn't working on a PhD, because it was enough research, et cetera, that I could have put together a nice dissertation probably for it. So that's one little regret there. But we got it together and we got it approved. And what's happened to go around when a person calls out of the blue and says, I have this friend, or I have a friend that's in the study and I really think I need it, I refer those patients to the nurse. If the nurse assesses that they have a cardiac history and that the patient is actually wanting like a second opinion, they'll go on and schedule them in for a clinic visit. And then from there, if they decide that they want to be in the study and if the doctor approves that, then they can initiate being in the study. So that's how we've done that. But so far, the interest has been pretty high, and I'm really working with the staff to not try to target specific people. If I'm involved in the clinic, the only thing that I look at that might preclude me asking somebody is we do get some people that live 100 miles away. So I want somebody to be able to travel. But I don't want just anxious people or just people that they feel like have some sort of emotional component. We want across the board for what we're looking at, which I'll explain to you in a little bit what it is exactly we're looking at. So I have a sheet that's introducing the freeze frame study, and I'm sorry, but that's what we call it because that's what it was back when we created it. We were beta testing the M-Wave, but we did not know at that time when the M-Wave PC was coming out. We do use the M-Wave PC technology, however, and using that when we do use it for the study. So the sheet explains basically if they're chosen for the treatment group, what that would involve. It's a randomized study, so we have envelopes. They're already pre-numbered, and at the time of them signing their consent form, the research nurse chooses the envelope, and that decides whether they're in treatment or whether they're in the control group. I'll say right offhand that because I don't have that scientific background, I could not bear the thought of somebody getting excited about doing this and being in the control group and not getting the opportunity. So at the end, I do teach every control person who's interested in learning the technique and offer them a follow-up visit as well. What their commitment consists to is a total of 9 visits. It's over a 6-month period of time. The first and the last visit are their clinic visits. Our data that we collect at the beginning and the end, so the control group will have had no intervention specific to us in that 6-month period of time, but we'll be just doing both of these assessments exactly the same at the beginning and the end. And it is a clinic visit with the physician, so a physical exam. They complete a stress and well-being survey, which HeartMath provided for us, which is a very comprehensive survey looking at how they feel that they're doing in their lives. A Beck depression inventory too, a Beck anxiety inventory. We look at their medical compliance, their compliance with taking their medication, of course, their vital signs, their BMIs. We do a 6-minute walk, and then we do a baseline, they call them STARS, and it's a baseline autonomic response using the heart rate variability technology with the M-Wave program, and I send that back to HeartMath, and they're analyzing that data for us. So that is what we're looking at before and after, and they're aware that that's what they're getting into. At the first 2 visits, they come in for their initial visit after their enrollment, and that is where they're taught the quick coherence method. I use the tutorial vignette that came with the freeze frame program. I love it for the study purpose because it goes straight to the point. It teaches, I press a button, it plays the audio overview. and that's the first thing I play for them. The second button I press is the quick coherence, and it teaches the three steps of the quick coherence technique. As you can hear me talking on the phone, I have no problem filling time, and this allows it to be succinct, and it allows it to be, for the study, I think it's excellent because everybody's getting the same lesson every time. I prepare the people going in to the study at their first session because they do have a tendency sometimes to feel like, great, I have somebody to talk to now, and especially if they have seen that that's part of my role at all in any other area, and I make quite clear that these are not to be counseling sessions, and they really understand when I talk about one of the outcomes that we want to see is that this could be streamlined and used in other physicians' practices, and if we're doing counseling, then the office can say, no, we can't provide that kind of service. So they really do understand and appreciate that. Of course, there is the human element, and sometimes I have to, I am interested if people have any concerns when they come in or comment. And, of course, people being human, I have to try to redirect a little bit. And sometimes it's just the time that it takes. But by the time our half hour's up, that's the end of what allows me to segue out of a conversation sometimes. But I really try not to give any therapeutic intervention type of advice. I will give them recommendations, help coaching with using the technique if they're having difficulty using the technique at all. That is not a problem. The sessions, I try to make it as easy as possible for the patients. In fact, there's no charge at all for the study, for any of the visits with the study. In our facility, the registration process is quite lengthy. You come in, you always have to be registered, et cetera. We circumvent all of that. In fact, they have my cell phone number that if we need to rearrange any kinds of visits, then they can do that directly with me. My goal is to make it as convenient for them as possible so that can't be seen as something standing in the way of them participating. In our protocol, it is written that the first two visits, which are 2 weeks apart, if we reschedule them, they must be done within a 3-day before or 3-day after window. The monthly visits after that must be conducted, if we need to reschedule, within a week or before or after. It doesn't throw the person out, but we have to report protocol deviations, and I can tell you more about what that will mean statistically at the end of the study. I'm hoping we're not having a lot of deviations. We've had 3 people drop so far, and just because of extenuating circumstances and health reasons. And out of all of the people I've seen, there's been 1 or 2 that just have not embraced everything all along the way. But otherwise, the results are pretty overwhelmingly positive, and the response is positive. For those first 2 sessions that are 2 weeks apart, the first session, as I was saying, they're taught the technique. We go over that. I also show the heart health vignette always on that first visit, which is very poignant and goes over really why this all makes sense. The second visit, they've had 2 weeks to practice, and they get a practice book that's about the size of a checkbook that actually can be put in a checkbook cover. In that practice book, it reminds them of the quick coherence technique. It reminds them of their instructions. They're given HeartMath internet address, because we're not discouraging them from educating themselves, which I think would be realistic in real life. And many of them have, but others have not. That's just the way that goes. Some people don't even have computers. But in there, I list on the first session, I make all of their appointments for the entire time, just so that we can know that we're going to be in compliance. I write them in pencil, however, making it clear to them I'm very flexible if we need to rearrange. But this just shows what we're looking at. And then they have records that they keep for their 10-minute practice session. I encourage them to do the 10 minutes even before they're out of bed in the morning to make it part of their brushing teeth routine in the morning and at night. But people, as you know from working with people, they will do it whenever it fits into their lives. That does seem to be a helpful suggestion, however. So there's a blank for your morning practice session, your evening practice session, and additional minutes. And I just ask people to just give a ballpark. If you think you've done it a total of 5 extra minutes, just write that down. Now, interestingly enough, we're doing this, and it's more a psychological method of encouraging compliance. It's not going to be something we really are looking at the end of the study that we've written into our protocol. However, I do believe it will be helpful if we have these standout results at all, that we can go back, pull their record, and say, okay, well, that makes sense. They were practicing 2 hours a day, or, oh, that makes sense. They weren't practicing at all. So that's part of the reason that we have initiated that. And they seem to like that. You know, a lot of people do resist record keeping, but a lot of people seem to appreciate that. That would be what their commitment is to try to do. How many sessions does it generally take to get results from a client? You know, it's so interesting because people that really embrace this and are open to this kind of concept, frequently within the first week, after the first 2 weeks when they come back, they're already noticing something that they'll report about. But what I have noticed, and again, we didn't put a this is just qualitative, we didn't put a mechanism to measure this in the study, but I've noticed this repeatedly, is that for people that are practicing routinely, fairly regularly, that at about 3 months, there seems to be just kind of where the stars align. And they're able to get coherent quicker. They start talking about using it at work more. And, yeah, I'll just take 30 seconds and use it. So it does seem to be, for me, it's kind of what I've been saying, that it looks like when you practice, if you put your money in the bank, that at 2 to 3 months, you start seeing the payoffs of getting some real effective immediate response. And people do report that visceral kind of the wave that we feel when we're getting coherent and you activate that positive emotion. And so they are very charged by that when they do notice that. One thing I do talk to them about, and I have always with the other patients that I would see in private practice or in the clinic, is what I would call the antibiotic effect, which is the biggest barrier with this technique that I have seen, is that people can get such profound and immediate results for whatever issue it is that they're incorporating it in their life for, but then sometimes in 2, 3 weeks, a month, stop using it because they think they're cured. And I just label that the antibiotic effect. Use that metaphor, how difficult it is to finish your antibiotics when they've been prescribed when you're feeling better after 6 doses. But this is your medicine. And I actually had a patient say, tell everybody that. Tell them it's their medicine. She said, once I learned that those 2 10-minute sessions were like me taking my medicine every day, that helped so much. So that is one little technique that the patient seemed to respond to. I think I've covered basically, and of course you'll have time to ask me questions, basically what the study consists of. I would like to share with you just some anecdotal information. Of course, we're not going to analyze the data officially till the very, very end of the study, but I started jotting down some reactions that people are having, which I thought was pretty interesting. It was very interesting. First of all, our very, very first patient was a colleague who actually had been seen at Prairie and had had cardiology issues and had really, really wanted to be involved. So she was involved, and she went through the whole 6 months. And at the end, I'm asking people, there's a space on the Stress and Wellbeing Survey to talk about their stressors. And I'm asking people, if you'd like to report any observations you have there, just please feel free to. So we could at least have one area that's not just filling in a dot. We actually get to hear what a patient's perception of how this has affected them. And she said to me, she heard me talking about that, and she said, you know, I know it's been good for me, but I can't really identify anything concretely. And the interesting thing was the reports, because I had been around her and I knew some of these issues that she would talk about recently, in the 6 month period that she was in the study, her interpersonal boundaries with her adult children and her husband and trying to help them and help her husband make some concrete steps to get healthier, she had totally put those in a different perspective. And in turn, her husband had really started getting some meaningful help outside of her trying to help him, professional help on his own. And for instance, one of his issues, because he had some health problems of his own, was that he had about 50 pounds to lose. And in that 6 month period of time, after he had started his own regime, had lost 20 pounds. And she found that she was much better at backing off from her adult children's issues. So it's interesting. We do see that sometimes where people will come and be like, well, I don't think it's this really, but my blood pressure is way down and I'm sleeping so much better. And I'm really liking it too. I think people have a hard time accepting the fact that something so simple that they could be doing could be controlling their health and changing their health or their well-being in a more positive way. I think as a society, we're so programmed to having to see it on a prescription pad and look at that and see the results from that to know that anything's being effective. So frequently I get that little bit of, well, and then as I prod a little bit, being the person I am, asking about different areas of their life, they do sometimes start connecting dots. But here's a little list that I've made. One person who actually, if I had to peg him and looking at his assessment results that he did, would not be a high idle person. He's probably in the low to medium idle range, real laid back guy. But his report that he was just amazed about, he had used Quick Coherence, the technique, and he had been practicing it for some time then, probably 4 months in. He'd used it during a root canal and had no medication at all and did not accept medication after the root canal, and he was just really impressed that it had helped him so much in that way that he was able to use that, kind of did a little experiment. I had one person that had chronic back pain, and after practicing Quick Coherence routinely, her pain had disappeared. I had one person, this was fairly poignant. Well, a lot of them are very poignant. This person had come in specifically with chest pain, tightness, nausea, and had had a full cardiac workup, and no cardiac issues specifically were found. She had some risk as far as some blood pressure issues and cholesterol, but there had been no cardiac events. After being in the study for 2 weeks, her chest pain symptoms were absolutely gone, and these had been with her for 2 or 3 months, and her chest pain was at an 8 or a 9. For the first time, she went across the country on a plane. She said she had never done that 4 months ago, and felt that the freeze frame had made made a big difference in her life, and she was also an artist and noted that her creativity and her artwork had improved greatly. There was a before and after absolutely distinct difference in this woman. She's completed the study. This was a very interesting, and I don't know statistically that any way we're going to ever really be able to show that it wasn't a poor result for the study, but this was a very fragile woman who was very pulmonarily compromised. She had horrible, horrible breathing, and it's probably at the end of life. And her health greatly declined over the six-month period to the point that she couldn't make it in for a couple of her visits because she couldn't walk that far. But she practiced religiously, and she absolutely knew, and I absolutely am convinced that the quality of her life was improved because she used this technique, and she would give examples of how she would use it sitting in a certain chair at home, and I just thought it was a perfect example of how being in the moment, staying one day at a time, and even though to most of us, what she was going through, her symptoms would have been absolutely miserable, she really felt like this technique had just made her keep a positive focus and live every day to the fullest. Several of the study people have reported the increased ability to handle work stress. I had several people with some pulmonary issues that had improved shortness of breath. Several people reported, again, in their relationships, better boundary setting, less self-questioning, and improved sleep. Better coping. Somebody had a family member with severe mental illness in their family, and of course that had caused them, it was unstable mental illness and had caused them much stress, and they were able to cope with that much better. One patient had just been in the throes of grief from the loss of her parents in close succession prior to the study and was just amazed at how using the technique were helpful with coping with her grief issues. Letting go of control issues, and that person that let go of control issues said that they definitely noticed decreased internal idle. They obviously embraced that terminology. This is probably the most poignant case to me, seeing this person day in and day out. I saw her in the clinic. This person is 38 years old and has what she describes an idyllic life, is very happy, wonderful marriage, small children, and day-to-day stress, but really feels like she copes with that generally well. She's healthy in general, has a BMI of 19, very petite little person, and her father, who was about 63, last July died suddenly of a heart attack, and she had an MI that day. She had a stress-induced heart attack that day. And then she pushed for her mother to get her health checked out. Her mother ended up having to have a bypass 1 or 2 months later. And then she found out she was pregnant. and then November of last year had a miscarriage. Throughout this process, this person who had a normal blood pressure of about 100 over 60, every time she would go to the doctor's office, her blood pressure would be 150 over 100, et cetera. She got this huge blood pressure issue. And by the way, she didn't have a lot of heart damage at all. I mean, it really, I'm not the medical person to ask, but there's a term for it of what they could see as far as the EKG and the diagnostic work they did that really told them that this was precipitated by this emotional stress. And she's not going to be at great, great risk later. However, the blood pressure did need to get under control. And she embraced this. And she, I don't think I told you, on week two, or on the second visit, for 2 weeks, the patients take home a handheld N-Wave. And they practice for 2 weeks at home so they can look at themselves. This is what it feels like to be in medium coherence. This is what it feels like to be in high coherence. Oh, you see it's dropping into low. What's changed? So they can self-monitor for those 2 weeks. And I really, really encourage them to use it as much as possible. Well, she insisted she had to have an M-Wave. She got an M-Wave for herself. She carries it around in her purse everywhere. And this woman has just made amazing, amazing strides and is now working using the M-Wave with her, monitoring her blood pressure, because basically what she's discovered is she's got this phobia about her blood pressure. And she wrote us a book basically on her follow-up survey and has just really, really done well. And she would be a great candidate to just have out there as far as the ladies in red about heart health, about would you ever believe this person would have a heart attack, and then B, what she's done to help herself and help her health. One woman we had hospitalized for gallbladder issues and said that using the technique had helped her tremendously during her stay. And the major issue with her is that she had quit smoking 4 months into the study and by the end was still quit, and she said her practices, she was using it. I encouraged her to use it every time she wanted a cigarette. So her practice was very high, her practice minutes. Two patients, one absolutely went off their SSRIs, their anti-anxiety, antidepressant medicine, not because, I mean, that was just what I found out at the end. And one person was decreasing it with their primary care because they felt that this technique was working as a replacement. One person had noticed an improvement, vast improvement in their morning blood sugars. I have another with decreased panic attacks. Other, again, with the relationship issues. And just more like that. And I stopped writing those. In fact, I've handwritten some anecdotal information from patients and on, but this was about 2 months ago. Just some of the notes that I'd taken. So all in all, I've had one or two people that have been what you would really have a hard time getting into high coherence and really not embracing the technique, and I really don't make any judgments about that except the fact that it was clear that they hadn't embraced the practice. I'm not real sure why, and I guess that just when you're looking at this number in a study, that's probably going to go along with it. So it looks like we have time left, Carol, if you want to ask anything or open it up.
Sure. Thanks, Becky. That was really great. Let's go ahead and open it up to questions.
I had a question. I work in a medical practice, and the doctor who runs the practice says that about 10% of the women in this country, in the United States, have some form of anarrhythmia, whether it's a kind of a prolapse or some kind of AFib. I'm the guy who does the stress management in her practice. About 1 out of 10 of the women I see, some kind of arrhythmia tends to show up on the M-Wave when I'm working with them. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, are you seeing this also, and are you seeing a decrease in the arrhythmias with the people that you're working with?
Actually, I don't feel like I'm able to see the arrhythmia. I don't use the M-Wave with them in the sessions except at the very beginning to introduce the M-Wave to them. And then on the M-Wave PC, there's really no way to monitor an arrhythmia because it's showing the heart rate variability, which appear, you know, the heart rate does jump around. We want it to. A healthy heart rate variability, it's not going to stay. So until they analyze the data at the end or until Dr. Jennison sees them, you know, and actually listens to their heart, I'm not able to analyze that kind of data myself. As far as people coming in and that being their primary diagnosis, I mean, we do have our share of people that have AFib, but we have seen a correlation with arrhythmia and tachycardia complaints that go along with that sympathetic drive, and it can be stress-related. So sometimes people are able, and in my private practice, I had people with that complaint that were able to control their arrhythmias by using the quick coherence technique on a regular basis. And those were some of the people I was talking about that would come back saying, okay, I'm having palpitations again. And they had not been practicing this routinely. But all of those obviously very, very much need to be medically checked out. AFib, for instance, can end up causing heart clots if it's not managed appropriately. Or, I mean, some of it, it's just all medically, needs to be medically evaluated. I guess some of it is more benign than others, but that's just my experience so far. To be honest with you, I'm really just trying to be the generic provider and not even a lot of these people, unless I've dealt with them earlier, I don't even know their medical histories as I'm treating them for the study.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And I did have a question regarding grief, and just quickly, I had a pretty massive heart attack in March of 2007, and the first thing I did when I came home, I had already had the freeze framer, was purchase the M-Wave handheld because I was literally in bed, and I started cardiac rehab. And I was also grieving a big loss, and the heart attack actually happened very close in proximity. But I did have fairly significant heart damage because I was happened to be in a very remote location at the time. But my question is that I found that the grief was very deep that summer, and I found that when I would try to use a positive feeling when I was dealing with grief, it wasn't what was really going on in with me. And so what I found is to get coherence, I had to bring that grief into and feel that grief in my heart, and that actually bring me into coherence. And I was just wondering if you've seen anything like that. As far as because the positive feeling just did not feel like something I could conjure up at that point.
Right. No, I have to say on my part that I've not heard it articulated in that way, but I am so happy that you shared that, because that clearly, that third step is the area that requires more coaching than anything, and it is very difficult if people are not in a positive, you know, in a situation at the moment that doesn't give them a wonderfully positive outlook. It's very difficult for them to activate a positive emotion. In general, it's very difficult for people to turn their thinking mind off, and then they think something pleasant, and then it triggers other thoughts. So that's a wonderful way to approach that, and I'm so happy to hear that you were able to get coherent while actually activating your grief, because I do think there is risk with this technique for some people to say, well, wait a minute, you're telling me not to be real with my feelings here. So I'm sure I'll probably use you as an example in the future if you don't mind.
No, that's fine. And actually, you're right. I do find that when I have to think to find the feeling, that's when I immediately drop in coherence. And when the feeling is strong enough, if I just breathe that feeling, I usually drop into high coherence.
Mm-hmm. And I typically fall back on the heart lock-in technique, truly, which is the third step. Correct me if I'm wrong, Carol, but I believe in the heart lock-in, you're really encouraging people to send love or compassion or care out to someone. And it seems that people sometimes, when they can't find it within themselves, are able to put it out there for somebody else. And that actually does seem to help getting away from the intellectual, the cognitive action there, to be able to just send care out to your child or send love out to even your dog or whoever. But Well, thank you for sharing. I think that's wonderful. I hope your health is doing well now.
It's very well. Thank you very much.
Okay. Becky, you want to tell us a little about your new job?
Sure. And I would like to say we look forward to somehow, and I'm sure HeartMath will help with that, with newsletters, et cetera. We look forward to sharing our results. And at that point, if people have any further questions, please feel free to contact us. You can always get my contact information through Carol, because we're very evangelistic about HeartMath and what we've seen it do for people, and we'd love to see it be more widespread, which is the reason we're doing the study. Basically, what I'm going to be doing, our cardiac rehab program at Prairie Heart Institute had one counselor that provides, they do two educational workshops on stress, and that everybody goes through, all cardiac rehab participants go through, and then they see each session for three individual sessions. That's the setup now. And I'm going to be taking over that position in August, and have basically been given a green light to turn that program from the counseling aspect and stress aspect into whatever I would like it to be. So I'm kind of have my vision hat on. I hope to go in there, you know, and within 3 or 4 months get a sense of a good way to proceed with that. Of course, I'm still interested in filling my study. So I kind of think, as we've talked about the staff, Dr. Jenison, et cetera, that are doing the study, I think that we'd like to get the study completed and maybe incorporate my vision with cardiac rehab is to incorporate using the N-Wave PC with all the cardiac rehab patients. And my vision, as I've talked to its director, would be we do have a computer station down there now. But my feeling in a clinical setting is I always want people to learn the technique using the computer program. Not that I expect everybody to buy it. So therefore, we would have a station, and they would be taught by a trained professional the technique, and then have the M-Wave available there for people to use during and after. And we also have a meditation garden. It's our Center for Living, which is like a mind-body program that Dr. Jenison actually happens to be the director of as well. And some of my participants that are in cardiac rehab, after hearing Bruce Wilson in the heart vignette talk about recommending doing it after cardiac rehab, the quick coherence technique, they're going into the healing garden and sitting and doing their quiet practice there. So there's really a lot of potential here for growth and incorporating HeartMath within our cardiology practice in general at Prairie Heart. I'm very excited about that.
Great. Sounds like a wonderful new position.
Mm-hmm. Just have to remember my limitations, my boundaries, that I am only one person. Yeah, so that I do feel it is important to go in there and get a sense and a feel. And I just know what I feel wonderful about for all of you that out there that may work with cardiac rehab patients, my husband tends to say congestive heart failure patient is a malignant illness. And with many of the patients, compliance and lifestyle habits are a huge part of that. And it's a high proportion. I'm not going to give it a number. I don't know the number, but I'd say over 50% of the people, there's some resistance, and they're not always the most compliant people in the world, and that just happens to be what his specialty is, although he does see other patients. But I've noticed when you go to cardiac rehab, and I had all these people running to the study, it's a given. They're a compliant group of people, or they would not be seeking out going in and taking part of this program 3 days a week or 2 days a week. So I'm really excited about it as far as the possibilities with a group that really, really are interested in doing whatever they can for their health. I think it's going to be very exciting.
Well, Becky, thank you very much for joining on the call today. And for anyone who has any questions or would like Becky's information, please send me an email, Carol, C-A-R-O-L, at heartmath.com. And, yeah, I know we have a number of heart centers who are quite interested in the work that you're doing. And then also, if anyone would like the practitioner's guide or the M-Wave PC, you can send me an email. I can send you that. Also, the Coherent Heart, the Science and the Research, or the Client Education Brochure. So those are materials we have that are available. And please send me an email, and I will be happy to send those to you. So, Becky, thanks for joining us.
Certainly.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You all too.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.